The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly, the best counter-pressing game behind closed doors ever. No, not a compilation CD of indie classics, but Jurgen Klopp's description of Liverpool's victory over Crystal Palace, just one result away from the title now. Elsewhere, Anthony Martial, described on Monday on the pod as not it, scores Manchester United's first Premier League hat-trick in years. It's Traore to Jimenez again as Wolves beat Bournemouth, while a shattered Harry Kane proves to those of us telling Jose to take him off that it might be worth keeping him on. We'll round up the other Premier League games, congratulate Arsenal on all their new contracts. In Europe, a good night for Juve as Inter and Lazio both drop points. All that, an FA Cup quarter-final preview, your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Lars Sivertsen, hello.
Hi, Max.
How are you?
I'm very good. It's a lovely morning.
It is a lovely morning. Almost too hot, I would say.
Well, yeah, yesterday for sure was pretty. I mean, I'm doing the whole face mask thing because I'm a good citizen and I have a black face mask. And I tell you, it is not 30 degrees Celsius ready, this face mask.
No.
I need to reassess my whole getup, I think.
Well, with that beard as well. I mean, no one has looked more like Bane after Bane has had a really bad few years.
That's true. Well, had a bad few years in many ways. But I mean, I think, I do think the beard is also a health hazard mask-wise. I don't think the masks are fully efficient if you have a massive beard. So I have to look. I mean, I'm not getting rid of it. I mean, I'd rather quarantine for a few weeks, but I'll have to. Maybe there's a beard-friendly mask out there. Football Weekly listeners, contact me on Twitter at Lars Sivertsen if you've seen a beard-friendly COVID mask. I'd love to get one.
It's a great Dragon's Den idea. Marcus Bean, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Max. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How's the last few months been for you?
Not too bad. I was saying before we came on air that lockdown's treating me quite well. I'm healthy. I've been able to spend time with the family, out and about. It's not been too bad, but I know it's been difficult for many.
Barry Glendening, nice to see
Hello.
You.
Hello.
People were very...
Is it nice to see me? Because I don't mind admitting, Max, I'm sick of opening my laptop and seeing your stupid face staring out at me day after day after day after day.
Well, listen, Barry. I think of
all the interesting things I've looked at on this screen over the years. Many of them highly inappropriate. And then just constantly for the last 3 months, I flip it open and there you are.
Well, listen, we have moved to 3 pods a week. I keep politely suggesting you don't need to do the Tuesday one. I mean, I'm pay as you play. It's irrelevant how many you do. You're on a much better wage structured deal than I am. If you want to take Tuesdays off, Barry, honestly, there's a whole cast list of people waiting to come on the pod. I'd like a variety of faces on my Zoom meeting apart from your shaved head.
You know, I can't take them off because someone might come in and take my place, make the shirt his own or her own, and I can't be having that.
Do you think when the good people at Guardian Towers were, you know, should we do an extra pod? We're doing risk assessments, you know, is it good? Is it bad? Do you think they were anticipating that this would be Barry's state of mind in the second week? I mean, some way down the line, maybe, but week two, this is where we are.
Anyway, Liverpool 4, Crystal Palace 0. I mean, we thought, Marcus, and I know you're a Liverpool fan, so it must be nice to be that close to the title. But the Everton game was so sort of duff and useless. It was nice to see Liverpool being brilliant again, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good to see Liverpool being Liverpool, as you said. I think with regards to most of the first games that teams have played, they have been pretty dour. Kind of that coming back from a pre-season kind of feel to them. People just getting their finding their feet. And Liverpool yesterday were sensational. I think a lot of talk's been made about Liverpool relying on the fans at Anfield to get them through games. And I think yesterday they showed that, yeah, fans or no fans, they're a dominant force.
Which was your favourite goal?
I think my favourite was the Salah's goal. I think it was some great, great football leading up to that. It was a great goal.
And actually that pass from Fabinho is, I think on Match of the Day, Danny Murphy said he didn't think Fabinho had that in his locker. And he obviously scored a brilliant goal as well. And he's turned into, I mean, there are so many brilliant players in this Liverpool team, Lars. I don't know, you know, but we can pick Fabinho out for now. It doesn't matter which one you pick to say, yeah, he's good. But he's really improved, hasn't he?
He is, and he is in just an absolutely world-class holding midfielders, and there aren't actually that many of them around at the moment. So, no, he's very good. I love the long shot from range, just because increasingly as sort of analytics and numbers are becoming a thing in football. I mean, one of the most obvious things numbers will tell you is that long shots are not efficient use of possession. Like, you shouldn't take long shots. They hardly ever come off. You lose the ball in a pretty good area of the pitch. I mean, if the option is giving it over and having a counter against you, obviously it's better to whack it. But in general, you shouldn't take shots from range. So if I was a coach, maybe I'd be sort of, oh, you shouldn't shoot, blah, blah, blah. But they're really good. Like, when they happen, they're great fun. So even though I do think a lot of players are told now to not shoot because the numbers say they shouldn't, it's great when it happens, and I'm glad it still does happen.
That's interesting, because does that depend massively on you know, which team you are? If you look at Liverpool Palace, right, I would suggest, if I was Roy Hodgson, I would be saying to my team, if you're within 25 yards, just have a go, because you're just not going to have that many opportunities. Whereas if you're Liverpool, you're going to have the ball all the time, right? So you might as well try. You've got a better chance of having more attacks.
The percentage of those shots that actually goes in is incredibly low. And we need to bear in mind, we usually see them on Match of the Day, because the way we consume football, most of us don't watch. I mean, you talked about it on the pod the other day. Increasingly few people actually watch 90 minutes of football very regularly. We watch highlights, and, you know, long shots look great on highlights when they go in, but statistically not many of them do.
But given, I mean, from Op to Joe, given that Crystal Palace failed to record a single touch in the opposition box against Liverpool, the first side in Premier League match since Op to started recording this data, then probably shooting from outside the box is not a bad idea for them. Barry, what did you make of this football match?
I thought Liverpool were fantastic, especially considering how lackluster and soporific their game against Everton was. The thing about Liverpool is, like you say, it's always so hard to pick out a standout performer, because there's always so many of them, and you can often make a case for numbers 1 to 11 to be man of the match. And last night they were just astonishing. Palace couldn't lay a glove on them at all. We're perhaps lucky to only lose 4-0. I mean, what went 4-0 with about 20 minutes to go, and you really worried for them, because you factor in the heat as well. And it's kind of similar to Sheffield United against Manchester United, which I suppose we'll get to later. But it was a performance worthy of the champions. Runaway champions Liverpool will very soon be. My favourite goal, I have to say, was Trent Alexander-Arnold's free kick, which I thought was delightful.
Mm. A lot's being made of why Palace put Max Meyer on that side of the wall, given he's 4'4", and why Wayne Hennessy was stood on his right post. But still, it was a lovely strike. Marcus, there will be obviously so much written and said about this Liverpool team and where they sit in the sort of gamut of greatest Premier League sides ever. And I suppose it does depend how you look at it, if you judge a team on years and years and years of success. But as a one-off, given what they could go on to do and the records they could break, they have to be up there as maybe the best.
I think they've produced the best season, in my opinion. I think we could safely say that. But in terms of being a great team, I think longevity is a benchmark, and this team needs to now go and win it back to back, two or three titles in a row, and then we can really be talking about them as the best ever.
When you look at how good Manchester City are on their day, and their days are quite frequent, and Liverpool are, 23 points ahead of them in the table? That's just remarkable.
Yeah, because we've had this pause, we forget about it a little bit, but just their league record is bizarre. I mean, they've in 31 games, they've drawn twice, lost one, and won the rest. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, the overall points record in the Premier League is theirs to claim if they want it. I mean, Klopp might feel it's better now for the club long term to use the remaining games to give game time to some fringe guys, maybe try some new things. But if they go all in, I mean, the overall points record is right there for them to claim. And when you think about this team, I tend to think that with Liverpool, if you go back to like the summer of 2016, you know, they just finished the season on 60 points. They were more than 20 points behind champions Leicester City. You know, you had guys like Benteke, Alberto Moreno, Jordan Ibe starting a bunch of games for them that year. I mean, if you'd have said then that 4 years from now, Liverpool would be, you know, head cruising for the title, heading for the all-time points record. They'd be arguably the best team in the world. I mean, people would have thought you lost your mind. They would have, you'd have called the doctor and you'd have to be like prescribed morphine and sort of penicillin and leeches and myrrh or whatever. Like people would be thinking you'd having a severe emotional incident. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, but I honestly think people will be sort of looking into the last couple of years of Liverpool and the way the club has been run and the decisions they've made. It's going to be studied for a very long time as just an extraordinary example of getting things right.
And is that, it's all those things, isn't it, that bring together a team that are still at 4-0 up, as Klopp said, you know, the best counter-pressing game behind closed doors ever. I mean, there's not a big, you know, sample to win that particular accolade, But, you know, Marcus, the amount of effort they are putting in. I mean, you must have been in games where you're winning 4-0 and people are like, actually, we won it now. We don't need to keep pressing quite this much.
Yeah, no, I think all professional footballers have been in games like that when they take your foot off the pedal. But I just think that it all comes from the manager. I think he doesn't allow them to take the foot off the pedal. I think he's on the sidelines. You can see that he's willing them on and they're relentless. I think that's the word that I use about Liverpool. It's wave after wave of attack. They pin you in and they don't stop. You know, they've got the centre-halves on the halfway line. You can't get out. And again, that's what broke Palace down. And it kind of breaks your will as an opposition team as well, when you know not only as a team technically unbelievable, but when they've got that will to run and work harder than you as well, you've kind of lost on both fronts.
I mean, Sir Alex Ferguson, and among other managers, has always stressed the importance of, you know, changing a winning team to freshen it up and make them more successful as you know, go on to try and win consecutive titles. And you just look at that Liverpool team and it's difficult to know how you could really improve it, to be honest. What would you suggest, Marcus?
I would suggest maybe another centre-half. I know they've been linked with Koulibaly from Napoli. I think maybe he fits the profile, maybe a little bit too old for us in the sense he's 29. I know we like to sign players that have some sort of resale value. And maybe it's difficult because I do think at times we lack creativity in the midfield. But also I understand that Klopp likes his midfielders to press and win the ball back, and that is their primary role. So potentially a midfielder, and also at the front three, they've played a lot of minutes. The question marks would be over the backup if one of them get injured for any prolonged period of time. So I know we missed out on Tino Werner, but maybe another attacking option up front.
Can I just forward what will no doubt be a very unpopular opinion with the Liverpool people? I think if this had been a normal season, if we didn't have the corona crisis and its general effect on the transfer market, I think this would have been a very good summer to cash in on one of the front three. If I'm not mistaken, they're all 328 now. It's from a squad planning perspective, it's not ideal to have those three growing old at the same time. And obviously breaking them up is not something you'd see as want to see as a fan, but replacing one of those three with someone younger makes sense while you can still get a massive transfer fee from one of them. But then no one seems to be getting massive transfer fees from anyone this summer, so it's not much point doing it.
It'd be nice if they all grew old together at the same club. So, you know, if they all just stayed at Liverpool and then they all just, you know, went to just a slightly worse club and together until they're like 45 and, you know, playing for Canvey Island. It would be a lovely thing.
I was thinking more like at a farm in Suffolk or something.
There is an interesting point, though, about some people are sort of saying, you know, what do Liverpool do now? Do they play the kids? Do they just try and win everything? But actually, because they've got a squad of 20 and they can make five substitutions, they can do both, really, can't they? They can, you know, they brought on what Williams and Elliot yesterday, who both look pretty sensational. You know, I can't see how it could be better for Liverpool right now, Barry.
I find this talk of whether they'll go for records or play the kids, it's irrelevant. I mean, personally, I can't see why you'd be bothered going for all out for the record. Maybe they will. They just need to win the league title. They need, what is it, two more points, possibly no more points. We're recording on Thursday morning. If City don't beat Chelsea tonight, then that's it. So, yeah, I mean, the kids are good. So they could play the kids and still get a record number of points. I think it's a sort of irrelevant argument, really. Once they win the league, it doesn't matter what they do. Hmm.
Do players care about those kind of things, Marcus, do you think? I wonder if, you know, you want the medal. I wonder if you go, yeah, I want to be in that team that got 107 points.
I think the players do care. Yeah, I think when you play football, you want to go down in history, whether it be winning cups, breaking records, and I think they do care about that for sure. I think, anyway, Liverpool can integrate one or two of those players into that team and it wouldn't make too much of a difference anyway. You know, you mentioned Elliot and Williams, and you play one of those at a time or two of them at a time. It's, I honestly think it's going to make little difference, especially against some of the mid to lower teams in the league.
We may well have just heard there why it is that those players are in a potentially record-breaking Premier League championship-winning team, and I'm not. And
Paul says, have the most recent performances of City and Liverpool dispelled the opinion that football without fans in the stadium is nothing? Both played sensational football at times. Just a question. Don't attack me when you read this. Lars.
I just find that sentiment a bit weird. I mean, football without fans in the stadium clearly isn't nothing. It's football without fans in the stadium. I mean, it's not as good, obviously, but it's the only thing we have right now, and it will change the way the game is played a little bit. But, you know, we've seen in Germany and we've seen here that, games can be played and it's still football. I mean, it's not the football we want to see. It's not what we would like to see, but it is what we have.
Hmm. That victory means that, as you've said, Baz, if Man City don't beat Chelsea tonight at Stamford Bridge, that's Thursday, Liverpool win the title. I mean, that game could be a good game, Chelsea-City. Goodness, City do, Marcus, look absolutely brilliant right now, don't they?
Yeah, I think they're the team with no fans you expect to do what they normally do. You know, I think it looks almost like training session, to be honest. You could see that they do this sort of session a lot, unopposed patterns of play, and they look sensational. I think City will win tonight, and I think I'm really looking forward to that City-Liverpool game.
Yeah, should be great, shouldn't it? At Old Trafford, Manchester United 3, Sheffield United 0. Anthony Martial, 3 smart finishes. The third one, a lovely flick and a lovely move, actually. That's Manchester United's first Premier League hat-trick since Robin van Persie in 2013 against Aston Villa. So under Moyes, Giggs, Van Gaal, Mourinho and Solskjaer before last night, naught hat-tricks for Manchester United. If you were Ollie, Marcus, would you be looking to strengthen there? Or do you think that is fine and, you know, you could make Martial your number 9 and mount a top 4, if not title challenge next year?
I'm a huge fan of Martial. I think he's technically an exceptional talent. My only question mark, and I don't know the player, is his desire. Has he got that number 9 kind of hunger for goals, you know, that insatiable hunger for goals, wanting to be in that spot, put your head in the way the ball, throw your body at it. Has he got that? I'm not too sure. Would I be looking to strengthen there? Probably. I'd buy somebody else and try and let the two of them fight for that position. I think he needs some competition at the moment. I think he knows he's going to play every week if fit, and I don't think that's a good position for somebody like him to be in.
Am I reading far too much into the fact that I thought it was quite astonishing that it was his first Premier League hat-trick? Was it his first senior hat-trick? Certainly his first hat-trick in England. And he forgot to get the ball. He had to be reminded to go and get his match ball, which I thought was really weird. But I may well be reading way, way too much into it.
I think strikers, that is, all the strikers I've played with, that's like their first thought. Let me go and grab that ball. They know what scoring 3 goals means, and that's something they thrive on. So they will go and grab that ball. So I think it kind of feeds into what I was saying about Martial and him, that hunger for goals and that hunger to do well. I'm not too sure if it's there.
It's interesting though, isn't it? We sort of praise footballers. We praise centre forwards who are selfless, and then we praise centre forwards who are selfish. And I mean, I guess you can do both, right? You just need both.
It depends on the game and the context. And I don't think anyone's... I mean, the fact that it hasn't happened before suggests that maybe we should be surprised. But I don't think anyone's massively surprised that Martial has it in his locker to knock 3 goals past a team that's not playing very well at Old Trafford. I mean, that sort of thing. I mean, the talent is obviously there, but is he a guy who will sort of, you know, bust his guts to run the channels for 90 minutes in a really difficult game against another top team, I guess is the question. But it also feels a little bit sort of mean-spirited to keep bringing up that now after he's done really well. I thought what was sort of noteworthy was just how easy United made it look, because these are the kind of games they've not really made to look easy at all, especially under Solskjaer. They have struggled a little bit in these sort of routine home games against teams that sit deep, the games where they're meant to control the pace of the game and set the tempo and all that. And it does feel like they've taken quite a big step there. Adding Bruno Fernandes just, you know, it just feels like something's really clicked into place with someone like him, who can sort of, he's always available for a pass. Someone who has the vision, the bravery, the ability to sort of spot and execute difficult things. And when you add sort of a hungry and motivated looking Pogba to the mix, it suddenly starts looking quite good there, doesn't it?
Mm. I thought Pogba was great again. And there was one dinked pass into Rashford, I think, in the first half that was... It is those little things when you're looking, and it did feel like a sort of attack versus defence game, which you might not necessarily have thought Man United, Sheffield United would be. And when you watch teams trying to break down that, it is difficult, right? And Manchester United look like they have those little bits of creativity, which should be really exciting for United fans.
It really is. And I also think about Pogba, it's really easy to think about him as someone who always wants to be in the center of things. He can come across that way. And maybe that is what he actually wants. But I do wonder if it's actually, if you look back to when he's played his best football at Juventus, you had quite a few other brilliant players in that team who were happy to receive the ball and make stuff happen. But at United, it's often felt, as when Pogba's playing at least, that everyone just gives the ball to him and expects him to do something. And under Mourinho in particular, he was expected to do something with very, very few players ahead of him to pass to. So as talented as he is, that's a really tough gig. And I guess what I'm hoping now, as someone who, I mean, I'm not a United fan, but I love watching Pogba when he's at his best, that now that he can share some of that creative burden with someone else and Fernandes, and the team seems to be growing in confidence, the fact that he doesn't have to be right at the center of everything that happens might actually be a huge benefit to him.
Yeah, I completely agree with Lars. I think I've unpopular opinion, but I think he would be pretty good in a poor team. I think he's had to carry that team. I think it's very difficult when you're a creative midfielder. You've got that burden upon you to try and create all the time, which means you're going to give away the ball quite a lot. I think now Bruno Fernandes has come in. He demands the ball. He wants to get on the ball, and now some of the pressure's off Pogba, and I feel that we'll start seeing the best out of him. I agree with Lars at Juventus, he had great players around him, and he's shone in that environment. France, he shines in an environment when he's got great players around him. I think now United are signing, making better decisions in the transfer market. I think that you're going to really see the best of Paul Pogba.
It's interesting, Baz, isn't it, that we, you know, for a long time we thought Solskjaer was just not up to this job at all, and didn't think he'd last until Christmas. And actually, we have to give him credit for the way United are playing.
I was really hoping you wouldn't ask me that question, because I'm in a state of existential angst, because I certainly thought he'd been overpromoted. But they've now 12 unbeaten. I think they've won 8 or 9 of them. They're not conceding many goals. And while there is a lot of room for improvement, I do think that if they don't qualify for the Champions League, despite how well they've been playing recently, I think that would be a failure. I'm not saying Solskjaer should be fired or anything, but I don't really know what to think anymore about that. I certainly did think he was overpromoted, I suppose next season we'll learn more, and he'll need a bit of luck with injuries and whatnot, but... Yeah, he deserves credit for last night's performance. It is worth noting that Sheffield United were absolutely diabolically bad for 70 minutes of the game. There was a period after the first drinks break that they were just about holding their own, but in the second half they were awful. Astonishingly bad, actually, considering how well they've done this season.
Yeah, it should be said, I mean, Sheffield United could lose the rest of their games 4-0 and they'll still have had a better season than any of us expected. I mean, you do worry that Chris Wilder would go on some kind of a rampage if that happened, but all that being said, they've been really poor after the restart. It was quite dreadful, and hopefully that's not going to continue.
I was doing the online report last night. At one stage, halfway through the second half, I likened it to one of those YouTube clips you see where there's four or five professional footballers taking on 200 school children, and the children can't get a touch of the ball. And it reminded me of that.
Ole made five subs in one go, the first manager to do it. I was so excited about that. John said, a footballing masterstroke, sheer genius. Ole telling Sheffield United they're no better than a third division Austrian team in pre-season. before the end of part one, let's talk about Wolves beating Bournemouth 1-0. Traore to Jimenez now combined for 10 Premier League goals this season, the most of any Premier League duo. Is Traore to Jimenez enough to get Wolves into the Champions League? It's going to be really tight, isn't it? Because, you know, Chelsea and United are in fourth and fifth if Man City's case, is upheld. It's still going to be hard for Wolves, but you couldn't write them off, could you, Barry?
No, they're a very, very good team. I really hope they qualify, because I think it was two seasons ago I suggested they would be knocking on the door of Champions League qualification this season, and was roundly ridiculed for my stupidity. But they're as good as anyone up there, I think, in fighting for those remaining places.
There was an amazing run from Neto at the end, and it was actually my fault, because I managed to miss, I think I saw one goal live, flicking between all the channels. Every time I was on a channel, the other team scored, and I happened to be watching the Wolves game when Neto ran through and put it wide. Bournemouth...
That would have been a brilliant goal.
Oh, wouldn't it? Yeah. Bournemouth's expected goals, this is Sam Matterface tweeted this out, their expected goals was 0.06. Which isn't a lot, is it?
I thought it would be like the poop emoji or something.
Joachim says, is Eddie Howe so underrated now that he's overrated? Or do you agree with Lars that he's just rated, which sounds a lot like average? Where is Eddie Howe now, Lars?
Well, I think it just reminds me of that scene from Clueless. There's like, you can be underwhelmed and you can be overwhelmed. Can you ever just be whelmed? I'm quite whelmed by Eddie Howe at this moment. But no, I think with Eddie Howe, I think you have to acknowledge that he did an amazing job getting Bournemouth up to the Premier League. And he's done so much there that he should absolutely be allowed to have one season where things don't go wrong without everyone saying, oh no, he's terrible. And they've had really bad injury problems this season. All of this bearing in mind, they're not little Bournemouth anymore. Like, I think their wage budget was something like the 12th highest in the league last sort of accounting year that we have numbers from. So they should, in terms of financial clout, they absolutely shouldn't be where they are. And it would be a bit of a disaster if they went down.
That'll do for part one. Part two will begin at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Spurs 2, West Ham 0. Comfortable if unspectacular. I was about to tweet that Harry Kane had to be taken off. I really thought that Jose should have taken him off against Manchester United. And then he went and scored, Marcus, which I suppose is Jose's way of, and Harry Kane's way of saying, you're an idiot if you think you should ever take Harry Kane off. But his goal-scoring record, 137 in his first 200 games in the Premier League for Spurs. It's only Aguero with 138 who has scored more in 200 Premier League appearances for one club. It's worth remembering that he's bloody good.
Yeah, I think he reminded everyone how good he was. I was the same as you. I was thinking he needed to come off in the Man United game, and I was also thinking he should have come off in that game. So Mourinho was justified keeping him on because he got his goal, and hopefully that would boost his confidence. But I think with him coming back from a long injury and obviously the season's just come back, I think they need to really be careful and manage him, because they don't want him to go out and get injured again. I think that's something that the medical team should be, well, probably will be advising Mourinho moving forward about how many minutes he plays and the loading that he's doing.
I read somewhere in the past couple of days, and I can't remember where, but we were discussing this on Monday, why Kane always plays, whether he should or not. And apparently his contract is very much performance related, and that's a large part of the reason he stays on quite a lot of the time.
Oh, okay. Harry Kane became the 11th outfield player to reach 200 Premier League games for Spurs. Quiz time. Can you name any of the others?
Dembele?
No.
Well, Robbie Keane must have had a
yes,
bunch.
Robbie Keane.
He was there for ages.
1 point for Lars.
Yay. Jermaine Defoe was there for a while.
Two points for Lars.
There we go.
One more centre forward.
Was Sheringham there for long enough?
Yes, 1 point.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Now you've got a centre back and a midfielder in this great quiz. Spurs players who've played quite a few games for them.
Ledley King?
No. Less popular now than Ledley King, I'd suggest.
Oh, Sol Campbell.
Correct.
Thank you. And a mid-central midfielder.
Christian Eriksen is the final one.
There was
some controversy about Spurs' first goal, Barry, whether it was one of those handballs against Davinson Sanchez. Everyone seems to think it absolutely was, even though they hate the law. Did you think that?
I did, yes. I thought it should have been disallowed. It is a daft law, but by the letter of that law, unless you're about to tell me I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, it should have been disallowed.
Perhaps more interestingly, Lars, is we were talking about Manchester United and that, you know, breaking down a team that are behind the ball, and Spurs just don't quite look as good at it. You know, that final ball, the little flick, all those difficult passes to play, they're just a bit more laboured, aren't they?
No, I got the impression there seemed to be quite a lot of moaning in social media about Tottenham's performance in this game. Which is fair enough, it wasn't great to watch. But listen, Tottenham haven't been some sort of fluid, attacking, slick outfit for quite a long time, even before Jose Mourinho took over. And you know, West Ham came to defend and they sat deep and they were quite disciplined. And it's hard to break down that sort of team. The sort of the David Moyes experience has kind of not been, which by the way, sounds like the worst sort of jazz fusion band ever. But the David Moyes experience, it hasn't been great so far for West Ham, but he does know how to set up a team in that sort of defensive way. And it took them a while to break through, but they got there in the end. I think it's not much to complain about there. Lo Celso looking sharp, liking him quite a lot. Mm,
yeah. Marcus, what are West Ham for? What's the point? And do you think they'll get out of it? I actually, you know, they had a couple of chances, didn't they? Fornals else had that chance, and Jared Bowen, who I thought had a good game, hit the post.
Yeah, they did have chances. And I'm agreeing with Lars again about how I thought that Spurs were quite good on the day. I think there's a lot of unfair criticism of them, and I'm not the biggest Mourinho fan, but I thought Spurs stuck at their task. It's very difficult to break down as two banks of four, which West Ham did. They sat in, but for saying that, as you said, I think West Ham on the counter attack looked quite good. I think, you know, there were two really good chances, and Moyes will be not happy that they were missed. I think West Ham have got enough to stay up. Just about. Do I think Moyes is the answer long term? No. I think they've got a lot of attacking talent there, which he isn't utilising to the best of their ability. And I think as a manager, that's what you're judged on.
Newcastle 1, Aston Villa 1. Dwight Gayle, who is an interesting... He's in the sort of Cameron Jerome limbo zone between the Premier League and the Championship.
Oh, the
he?
Robbie Earnshaw of Ortex. Or
yeah.
But you
do wonder if he's watching Joe Linton, who did score, I guess, so maybe merited his starting place. I think... He's got a great goal-scoring record. I mean, look, Marcus, you're the only footballer here who's, you know, played at different levels. And I guess, is it fair that, you know, it may be that Dwight Gayle's level is just not in the Premier League, or should they give him a run?
I think there's definitely a difference between the levels. I think that jump from the Championship to the Premier League is a big one. I don't think he's quite bridged the gap. Saying that, you could tell from his body language after he scored that goal how disappointed he is that he's not getting a run out. He sees Joe Linton ahead of him, who's not scoring goals, and he's probably thinking to himself, just give me a chance. I think they could do a lot worse than giving Dwight Gayle a run out, and especially with a striker who's not firing. But I do think he probably sits in that kind of zone of not quite being good for the Premier League, but probably too good for the Championship.
Again, on Match of the Day in the UK, they were talking about how good Steve Bruce is. And, you know, I think the quote was he's done equally well as Benitez. And like, it can't just be that Steve Bruce is everyone's mate that he is spoken of so highly. Or can it, Barry?
Possibly can. Look, I think Steve Bruce has done a decent job at Newcastle under difficult circumstances. I think most of them are more interested now in the Saudi takeover, which... remains up in the air, but I'd imagine if that goes through, Steve Bruce would probably be out the door. and he won't be missed. And it's a bit unfair, but, you know, he's big enough and old enough to know the score at this stage, and he'll get a nice payout and he'll be all right.
Here, a very quick word on Alassane Maximan, who was tremendous again, completing 10 dribbles, which is a pretty wild number. It's more than everyone else on the pitch put together. And alongside Adama Traore, most fun player to watch in the league at the moment. Is that fair?
How do you complete a dribble? Does that mean you've got to get past at least one person and then keep the ball? Or can you just run?
Yeah, I think that's the statistic.
Run with the ball. Run with the ball, but not go past anyone.
But then how would you measure the number if you just run?
Well, I don't.
You have to run past someone for it to mean anything. Okay. Right?
And what if you just, like do a kick and run? What if you just like
knock it past him?
Yeah. What if you do a Steve Guppy? You know, a Jason Wilcox? Is that a complete dribble?
I'd like to think that's still a dribble, right? You're going past the person. Yeah.
How many dribbles did you complete in most matches, Marcus?
Zero. I just got it and give it to the players that could dribble.
Marcus, surely you could do the thing where you knock it past them and then run them over, basically, on the way to collecting the ball.
I'd probably be quite good at that.
Yeah. Jimmy says, why are Villa so shit? And why do they make my life such a misery for the last 3 decades? I think he might have sent this tweet before El Mohamedi secured them a point. And actually could be a vital point, Marcus.
They were awful yesterday. I only watched the highlights, but that was the highlight of the game for them. That one goal in an 89th minute. Before that, they didn't lay a glove on Newcastle, which says a lot about how they're playing at the moment. It's really disappointing. And from all the games I've watched since post-lockdown, they've been poor.
I thought it was quite weird because I watched Match of the Day this morning and the studio seemed in agreement that a draw was a fair result, and I was watching it. I know highlights can be deceptive, but I was thinking, how the hell did Newcastle not win that game? It seemed they threw away 2 points.
Norwich 0, Everton 1. My main takeaway from this was that, you know, the goal popped up on the, you know, on the scores, and it said Keane, and I was like, Moise Keane has scored, and then I realised there was an E on the end of Keane, and I was like, it's Michael Keane. I was so desperate for Moise Keane to do something. Fullhandy says, well, a lot of people got in touch to talk about Everton's unnecessary away kit, and I thought it was an absolute, absolute outrage. He asked, what's worse, Everton using their away kit unnecessarily, or the lack of an appropriate fake crowd effect for the switching of play? There isn't the ripple of applause where a centre mid just knocks it across field to the other fullback, is there?
And atrociously, there's no sound effect for sort of sarcastic jeers when someone falls over. I mean, that is the big problem for me. Arsenal, Man City, there was a particularly egregious one where Arsenal were already a couple of goals down and Sterling, I think, got to the byline and sort of fell over instead of crossing it. Like, that would be the biggest cheer of the night from the away section. I mean, when you're being tonked by Man City, those are the moments you live for. That's the only joy you have left in your life.
Producer Sammy wants one when the Oppo goalkeeper takes a goal kick, of course. Or the one where the fans applaud the goalkeeper sarcastic because he walks into the goal and then go, no. So Norwich are down pretty much. Do they stick with Daniel Farker, Baz?
I don't know is the honest answer. I think I like him. They've had a very desperately poor season, and for all the talk that they're the best worst team in Premier League history, I reckon if you did a bit of number crunching, you'd soon find out that they're probably not anywhere near the best worst team in Premier League history. Am I being unfair? I don't think so. I mean, I have a good friend who's an Arch fan, you know her as well, occasional supply producer and presenter, Melissa, and she's pretty enraged with their most recent performances. You just know they're going to lose. I mean, I didn't give them a prayer yesterday.
Everton now just 4 points off seventh in an unlikely Everton Cup, so that would be exciting, wouldn't it? Leicester 0, Brighton 0. This was not a good game of football. Neil Mopai missed a penalty. The Sky Sports match report said that effort was only one of 3 shots on target in a very tactical game that involved little goal mouth action. You can replace tactical, I think, with whatever word you like there.
I didn't think that game was that bad, to be honest. I did the online report of it. Brighton, I think, should have won. They were probably happy with the point in the end, because they were hanging on towards the end. But they certainly dominated the first half, got the penalty, missed it. But I think that's an unfair assessment. Leicester were quite surprisingly ineffective in the first half, and I was very impressed with Tariq Lamptey, who made, I think it was his first start for Brighton since signing from Chelsea in January. Little pocket rocket at full back. He was outstanding. I have seen a lot worse games since the end of lockdown.
A little bit worried about Leicester. I mean, they've not looked up to much in their first two games after restart. And their fixture list for the run-in isn't easy. They're playing away to Everton. They're playing away to Arsenal. They're playing away to Tottenham. They've got Man United at home in the last game of the season. I mean, they have a bit of a cushion down to the chasing pack, but I don't think this sort of Champions League place is completely done and dusted for them.
Hold on, Lars. You just said their fixture list isn't easy, and then you say they're playing against Everton and Arsenal.
Yeah, I think those are
pretty easy to me.
That's a funny joke. But if you produce almost,
no, I'm not joking.
If you create almost nothing against Watford and Brighton, then those aren't games you're looking forward to, or shouldn't be anyway.
Well, you mentioned
I would relish a game against Arsenal at the moment. Southampton are playing them tonight, and I would fully expect Southampton to win.
We'll see. Are the worst home team in the league so far, so we'll be intrigued to see how that goes.
We mentioned that game, and that is tonight, Thursday night, so you may well be listening after that game has happened, and you'll know who won.
At B. Glendening.
You'll know who won in Barry v. Lars. are Everton and Arsenal any good beef that has been festering for years? Now, Arsenal, on the Football Weekly WhatsApp group, highly sought after place to be. There was a lot of chat of Arsenal's contracts that they doled out. 1 year to David Luiz, that obviously got the headlines. 4 years to Mori, 4 years to Cedric, Danny Ceballos until the end of the season. On David Luiz, Edu said, he's a really important player for us. He's played most of our matches this season, has been important for the team. His passing, his communication with the team on and off the pitch. He helps everyone. No mention of his defending in that quote. Is this a terrible decision? It seems easy to mock Arsenal, but is this the right thing to do?
No, so Edu shares the same agent as Luiz, Suarez, Mari, who have all signed contract extensions. Arsenal have been heavily linked with Coutinho and William, who again has the same agent as Edu. I think working closely with an agent could be highly beneficial for a club, as long as there's the right checks and balances in place. As you can see from Wolves and how their relationship with Jorge Mendes has been so fruitful for the club, I think it can work. But on the face of it, the players that Arsenal are re-signing and looking to sign don't really fit a club that are trying to rebuild a team. Obviously, the profile and the ages are quite old. So I think some serious questions have to be asked about Arsenal's recruitment department. And that's gone to show for me in some of the transfer dealings that Edu's done, brought to the club at the moment.
Yeah, the Arsenal setup seems particularly messy. I guess it's worth pointing the listeners in the direction of, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this on the Guardian pod, but since he's an oft-mentioned acquaintance of the pod, Miguel Delaney, Twitter firebrand Miguel Delaney, had a good little expose of goings-on behind the scenes at Arsenal, and it does seem like a complete mess. I'd like to flip a question over to Marcus, since we have a sort of a former midfielder on the pod. Like, playing in front of someone like David Luiz, I mean, obviously he does good things. Like, his passing game, as mentioned, is very, very good. But he's also a centre half who will just sort of turn up in slightly bizarre positions sometimes and just sort of attack balls he probably shouldn't attack and just do very odd things. Just as a midfielder, Marcus, does that create a bit of uncertainty that you have this sort of guy behind you who will do odd and unexpected things suddenly and for no reason?
100%. I think as a holding midfielder, you like to have the whole game in front of you and be able to concentrate on what's in front of you rather than behind you. So as soon as you've got a defender like Luiz who constantly drifts out of position, you've now got two jobs to do. You've got to think about where's Luiz going to be, how I'm going to have to fill in for him, and also you've got to concentrate on your own job. So I think a lot of unfair criticism is labelled at the likes of Xhaka, Guendouzi and Torreira, who obviously aren't great positionally anyway, in the sense that they get overrun quite often and leave way too much space in the middle. But also they are trying to cover for a man that makes inexplicable mistakes. So I think it definitely makes the midfielder's job harder.
Yeah, you mentioned Guendouzi. There's sort of a bit of reports that he was running around against Brighton talking about how much more he earns than them. And I just don't know if that's ever happened, Marcus, to you. That
it's happened on a few occasions. And not, I wouldn't say too many. I played 18 years and it's probably happened in two occasions. Players giving it the money shout. And I always used to think to myself, when you said that, I've won the battle of the mind games, because now you were not talking about football. You're talking about money, which has no influence on the game. And I think it really says a lot about Guendouzi's character for somebody so young to be focused on money, essentially. I think the people around him need to put an arm around him and tell him, listen, the focus is football, the money comes. But, you know, it was really disappointing hearing that from somebody so young. Mostly when it's happened to me, it has been senior players that have given it. And I always think to myself, listen, if your focus is money, I'll see you on the way back down, because you won't be where you are for too much longer.
I mean, if true, which is a big caveat with this, I like a confident young player, but Guendouzi, good Lord, I mean, he's a guy who's achieved literally nothing in the game. Like, he plays for Arsenal, but he plays for the worst Arsenal team in 25 years. Maybe pipe down a bit, no?
I like the idea of, you know, Davy Proper just saying, to be honest, we're all in the top 1%. We're all doing okay here. You know, if you invest sensibly, you'll probably, you know, we'll probably be absolutely fine. I can recommend a good IFA. You know, yeah. Like, anyway, that'll do for part two. We'll begin part three with Lars's Euro roundup. Part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's begin with Lars' Euro roundup. Great night for Juventus, Lars, even though they didn't kick a ball.
Yeah, you'd have to say that, with both Inter and Lazio dropping points under pretty dramatic circumstances. Inter looked like they had it sewn up against Sassuolo. Well, actually, they looked like they had it sewn up, and then they really didn't have it sewn up. Then they had it sewn up again, and then they didn't have it sewn up again in the end. So that was, it was a bit chaotic.
Some bad sewing in Italy.
Yeah, terrible sewing, really. They were 2-1 up against Sassuolo, should have gone 3-1 up. Gagliardini was just a sensational miss. On a rebound from a Lukaku finish, worth seeking out. It's one of those. I wonder what the XG might have been for that one. I mean, obviously, it can't have been 100, because that would have been wrong since he did miss it, but a 0.99 XG or something in that sort of region. Absolutely extraordinary. Christian Eriksen starting to find his feet a little bit, looking active, looking involved. But no, they messed it up in the end with Sassuolo coming back and equalizing for them, making it 3-3. Elsewhere, Lazio were 2-0 up away to Atalanta, but Atalanta just absolutely cannot stop scoring. They're so full of goals. I believe they're the highest scoring team in Europe in all competitions this season. So even though they were down 2-0 to Lazio, they came back and made it 3-2. Another thing to look up on the internet video sites, Ruslan Malinovsky's goal for Atalanta. Absolutely brilliant. And actually, Milinkovic-Savic's goal for Lazio was pretty good as well, talking about long shots. So fun and games in Serie A. Much more entertaining than most of what we've seen in England so far, to be fair.
Real Madrid beat Mallorca. Sergio Ramos scored a lovely free kick. They look to be just slightly more competent than Barcelona at the moment, don't they?
That is a very good way of putting it. Mallorca at home is not... Mallorca are appalling away from home. They've got one win, two draws, and 12 defeats on the away from home this season. So you that should be a routine win. But whereas Barcelona have got some incidents, which I thought you explored very well with Sid the other day, their midfield looking a little bit one-paced, and they looked that way again against Athletic Bilbao. They got the goal in the end, created a little bit more than they did against Sevilla, but you know, it's not quite right at Barcelona at the moment. Real Madrid have been very much cruising since they came back, and just look like they have more strings to their bow at the moment.
We should mention Salzburg's Zlatko Junuzovic, who scored an absolute ping of a volley direct from a corner in off the bar, which was almost better without fans, because you just heard every single, you heard the volley, you heard it hit the bar, you heard it hit the net. It was absolutely glorious. And I noticed that the Norwegian league is back on, Lars, and there's a team,
it's great, isn't it?
And there's a team called Odd. And I don't, I'm surprised we never mentioned that, you know, Odd are playing in Norway.
Yeah, they played in Europe a few years ago, and they had like a whole hashtag called the Odd Adventure. And that's, you know, no, they've not had a great start to the season, but as you'd expect, Molde, 3 wins out of 3, just sort of steaming ahead, will probably win the league. Rosenborg have been quite poor. They play, I believe they might play tonight. Anyway, they no wins in the first two for Rosenborg. Very, very bad. But there's been some fun games.
All right. FA Cup quarterfinals this weekend. Norwich, Man United, Sheffield United, Arsenal, Leicester, Chelsea, Newcastle, Manchester City. Baz, you're pretty adamant that when this gets to the FA Cup final, you've got to wait until football fans are allowed in. But I can't see how that's going to happen, because they can't wait for the FA Cup final until the next season started, can they?
No, I just think it would be a crying shame to play an FA Cup final behind closed doors. It's taken a lot of dents. Its prestige is not what it used to be. And I think playing an FA Cup final behind closed doors could do the tournament irreparable damage. But if that's how it has to be... I mean, when I was growing up, that was... what everyone wanted. They wanted to win an FA Cup final, you know, that was the dream. I'm not so sure it is anymore. Kids now grow up dreaming of finishing fourth in the Premier League. But it'd be awful, really awful. But, you know, circumstances are almost certainly going to dictate that that's what will happen, and it's a shame.
Marcus, who's this excitement in your house? What's happening?
I know. The missus nearly walked in Starkers, so...
Wow!
I had to quickly warn her off.
It's a different kind of podcast, but look, we're looking to explore all avenues. Villa play Wolves, Watford, Southampton in the Premier League. In the Championship, two massive games. Brentford, West Brom, fourth v first. Leeds, Fulham is second v third. Leeds have said they'll ensure there are no more offensive images after a photograph of Osama bin Laden was placed on a seat at their Elland Road ground. I mean, you've got to forgive whoever the kid is who's just printing out all these pictures and sticking them on seats. I mean, it's...
There's a lot of terrible people from recent history who people don't really know what they look like anymore. So I think the potential for shenanigans is extraordinary here.
Yeah. Neil Warnock is back in football.
Speaking of...
That isn't fair, is it? I apologise to Neil for that segue. Taking his last job in football for the 500th time, he's in at Middlesbrough. They got rid of Jonathan Woodgate. Anyone have any? Do you ever cross paths with Neil Warnock, Marcus? I mean, I presume he's managed everybody in football.
He's managed everyone. I'm pretty sure I've played against his teams before. It's a bit of a strange one from Middlesbrough's point of view, because obviously they brought in Woodgate to kind of change the style and the way they were going to play. Brought in a load of players that matched that, and now they've kind of done a complete U-turn and brought in Neil Warnock, who's not generally renowned for his footballing style. So it's a bit of a strange one. Obviously, they don't want to get relegated, which is understandable, and they feel Warnock's a man to kind of keep them up. But I just... very wary of clubs that do a complete sea change of style.
I like Neil Warnock. I think he's a lovely bloke. A lot of people don't, but I've never incurred his wrath. There's actually a brilliant mashup video on. I saw it on Twitter.
So good.
Of it's him managing the Chicago Bulls. it's the Last Dance mixed with various Neil Warnock halftime spiffs. Over the years, it's very good, well worth seeking out. But I like him as a guy. He's clearly a very effective manager. He's got loads of teams promoted from the Championship. But towards the end of his reign at Cardiff City, in his last job, they were awful, like really, really, really bad. So, but yeah, he may well make a difference at Middlesbrough.
Now, the Premier League has launched a dedicated reporting system for players, managers, coaches and their family members who receive serious discriminatory online abuse. The Central Rapid Response Reporting System will enable players, managers and coaches to notify the Premier League of serious abuse received via direct message on social media platforms. This sort of follows Ian Wright putting out some just of unbelievable abuse that he's received online. We've talked about this a lot and the Premier League and football's reaction to the Black Lives Matter movement, Marcus. I just wonder what your feelings have been over the last few weeks.
It's been tiring. I think as a black man, it's been this whole saga has been tiring. It's like every day there's something new in the news. Twitter and social media has become a place of just completely vile things being said. It's definitely shown where people start to show their true colours, which is good because these are people that were probably lurking in the shadows before and doing what they normally do behind closed doors. I think the Premier League, which is great, the Black Lives Matter on the shirts, the kneeling's great, but would love to know a little bit more about them as an organisation and their diversity in senior positions, because ultimately it's great, the kneeling, etc., but we need to see change, and that for me that is change. But yeah, anyone that's been abused, they should report it, and that's a step in the right direction. People need to realize it does have a real heavy psychological effect on different people. Everybody it affects people differently. For me personally, it's water for ducks back. Yes, I'll report it, but for me personally, it doesn't have that much of an effect on me. But I do know from my experience and speaking to other people that it can really have a severe mental effect on people. So there's definitely a step in the right direction with the reporting.
I'm not sure how it is a step in the right direction. Because if players report to the Premier League, what can the Premier League do? I don't see how it's going to be in any way beneficial to anyone. It's up to the likes of Twitter and Facebook to deal with this abuse. There's very little the Premier League can do about it that I can think of.
My hope is that they will liaise with the police and make sure that action's taken. I think it's difficult as a player, you know, you report it to the police and then you probably haven't got time to manage that process about has it been chased, has it been an action been taken, has it been chased up? And I'm hoping that the Premier League are now going to be the people that, you know, really push the police to take serious action against people that are abusing people online.
You talk about diversity and representation. You're doing your director of football course, Marcus. How's it going?
No, it's going well, thanks. First year's out of the way, so now moving on to the second year and start back in September. It's a great course.
And do you feel that you will get a fair crack of the whip?
I think it's harder. I think it's going to be more difficult than it would be for my white counterparts. I've accepted that. Do I accept that in the long term? No. In the short term, I know it's going to be harder. And listen, I've always been told as a kid, unfortunately, I'm going to have to work twice as hard as other people in the same position as me. Hopefully when I have my children, it's going to improve for them. But at the moment, I do believe it's going to be, the opportunities are going to be limited and it's going to be more difficult for me just because of the colour of my skin, unfortunately.
So you did year one. No exams. What do you have to do? Any exams? How does it work?
No, it's there's a dissertation at the end. It's all coursework based or assignment based. It's been going well past, which is the most important thing. And now looking forward to year two and just getting qualified and really, you know, chasing my dream as such.
And do you have like work experience? Like, I mean, presumably, like you've obviously got a lot of contacts in football. Presumably, a big part of this course is going into clubs and seeing how it works from that side of things.
I think most of the stuff I'm doing at the moment is geared towards that role. So I consult for some different companies. So I'm learning the business side. I also am a first team scout at Brentford. So again, I'm looking at that side of the business recruitment side. So with all this, you're definitely meant to be doing on the job stuff that's going to obviously further your chances of becoming a director of football.
Chaz says, how does Marcus fancy Wickham's chances in the playoffs? I'd sort of completely forgotten about the League One playoffs and then I was trying to find them. They're on the 3rd and the 6th of July. Portsmouth play Oxford and Wickham go to Fleetwood.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty confident about Wickham's chances. Obviously, having played there for as long as I did, I'm willing them to win. I feel the style of play, the way Gareth sets his teams up, nobody we want to be playing Wickham. I think it's going to be a difficult game for anybody, and I think they've got a good chance of beating Fleetwood.
Barry, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Marcus, thank you. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Thanks, guys.
Lars, thank you.
Thank you, Max.
And we'll be back on Monday.
Hi, Football Weekly fans. This is an apology from me, Max Rushton, on behalf of myself, Barry, Lars, Marcus, the whole of the Football Weekly family, The Guardian, my family. You may have heard in part one that Crystal Palace did not touch the ball in the Liverpool penalty area in the entirety of the game at Anfield last night. It's come to our attention that 3 minutes into the game, Andros Townsend did just touch the ball inside the box, going away from goal. We'd like to apologise to Crystal Palace, to Andros, to Roy Hodgson, Steve Parrish, and all of the Eagles fans. I would say this and other mistakes like it won't happen again, but we all know they will. Thank you.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.